Every year, our youth, as we heard, go on their summer mission trip. They've gone to Buffalo, to Syracuse, to Ohio, to New York City. This year, both groups are here in Rochester, especially since we weren't quite sure what was going to happen with the pandemic and what that would mean for things like travel and accommodations. So they're both close to home, which I think is great. There's so many amazing things to encounter right where we are. Sometimes it's the things closest to home that we get used to overlooking. A few years ago, a friend of mine came to visit me. He had never been to Rochester before, and so of course I asked him what he would like to see. He asked if we could go see the Susan B. Anthony House. But then immediately he took it back and he said, "Well, but you live right around the corner from this, so this would not be interesting to you because I'm sure you have been there hundreds of times." And you have guessed what my answer to that was. I hadn't even been there once. Precisely because I live right around the corner, I'm so used to thinking of it as familiar that I had never actually stopped to take it in. I had never let myself actually go into that holy place and see what I could learn. It's becoming easier and easier for us to trace the same routes every day. It's so easy to live our lives without passing through most of the place we live, and I expect that a lot of our global community finds the same thing. No matter where we are, this seems to be becoming easier and easier for us to get isolated in the same paths every day. And then we never encounter most of the people that we live near. Each person's story is holy ground, and sometimes I just think of all that we're missing. In today's gospel, Jesus sends the disciples out on a kind of mission trip. They're also going out not to a faraway place. They're not going to a different country. They're going to the neighborhoods that surround them right where they are. Like our youth, they're being sent out to serve and to heal. But also like our youth, we expect that they will be changed. The hope is that they will be learning solidarity and social justice, and that they will overall just stay present, just connect with each other and with neighbors in a way that transforms everybody involved. Maybe you've gone on a trip like that at some point in your life. If you have, you know that beforehand, there's always the all-important list of what to pack. Things to bring, things definitely not to bring, if you are to thrive in this new adventure that you're starting. Which is helpful, right? Packing was a cause of great anxiety in the house that I grew up in. Whenever my family went on a trip to a place that we hadn't been before, loading the car was an hours-long process. We had to have a coat in case of snow. Didn't matter if we were going to the desert. We had to have a raincoat in case of rain, a hat in case of sun, layers to accommodate whatever the temperature was. We had endless snacks and bottles of water. We had to have a blanket in case the car broke down on the side of the road and we were stranded for the night. The glove box was full of maps, never just one, always several, so we could make sure we could plot out exactly where we were going and how to get there and how long it would take. So why did we bring all of this? Mostly just because it gave us a feeling of being protected. We wanted to feel secure for any eventuality, as most of us do when we're starting out on a journey, whether that journey is becoming a parent or a grandparent, starting a new job or retiring from one that we've held for a long time, navigating our way through an unexpected grief, navigating our way through an unexpected love. We want to feel that we're prepared, not just materially, but even more spiritually. We want to feel in that way too, that we have the right stuff. And often we start out with grave doubts about that, don't we? We always wonder if maybe there's some special skill or wisdom that other people have packed away inside them that equips them to be this new role, something we don't have. And we wonder, well, what if our energy just runs out? What if I'm left stranded in this unknown territory and I don't know what to do? I don't know how to proceed. One of life's lovely secrets is you never need as much as you think you do. Whenever my family would set out with our car so carefully overpacked, inevitably we would find that the flat tires, the wrong turns we had feared, the fluke snowstorms that we had anticipated, they almost never happened. And with inward journeys, it's the same way. We never know what's ahead when we come to a major turn in life. But once we start down the road, we find almost every time that of course, we have everything we need. Just bringing ourselves is usually enough. Jesus tells his disciples, take no food, no bag, no money in your belt. They're to wear sandals, but not a second tunic. A second tunic would have been what protected them from every kind of weather. It would have given them that sense of being ready for any eventuality. But Jesus says, no, none of that. Leave it behind. Leave your need for security behind. Take nothing but a walking stick. In other words, trust the journey. One of my favorite ministries is a group called the Faithful Fools in San Francisco. They were started by a Franciscan sister and a Unitarian minister. They're a ministry of accompaniment with people living on the streets in the Tenderloin District, which is one of the city's most hurting places. The Faithful Fools' mission is simple, just to be good neighbors in that place, to listen, to connect, to pray, read, sing, eat together with their neighbors, to hear each other's stories with no other agenda. And from this, amazing things have happened. They've become a force for social transformation, first on their block and then in the whole city. It all started with people just being with each other, no one trying to fix anyone else, just being and witnessing to each other's lives. Youth groups often visit the Fools to participate in what they call a street retreat, which is joining them for a day on their ministry of walking around the Tenderloin, listening to people and being with them. When they're getting ready to set out, the teens are instructed on what to leave behind, which includes their cell phone and their wallet, two things most of them, and I expect most of us, are used to never being without. So they probably feel like the disciples did when they were asked not to take anything in their belts and no food and no bag. People always traveled with these things in those days and probably focused a lot of attention there. As we tend to do, we can end up centering our lives around our phone and our wallet. But of course, we know that they also tend to distract us. And Jesus instructs his followers to stay with the people in front of them. I love how he uses that phrase, stay with the people that cross your path. They're not to let anything take their attention away as they go out to meet their neighbors, to be in the moment, present with people, to enter their world, their story. For visitors to the Faithful Fools, that prospect is pretty scary at first. You can imagine the gulf between the experience of these kids and the experience of a person living homeless on the streets of the Tenderloin. It always starts out seeming too wide to cross that distance between them. And so the teens are invited to set a few more things down. Before they go on their walk, they're asked by their trip leader, what words come to mind for you when you think of someone living with homelessness? And slowly they begin to call out answers. They call out drugs, depression, isolation. As they speak, their leader writes the words on a sheet of newsprint tacked to the wall. The labels keep coming. Loneliness, they call out. They call out lost, disrespected, invisible. Then they look at this newsprint sheet together, all these assumptions and stereotypes that they've set down to leave behind them. And once during a session like this, the youth sat there looking at these words for a long time in silence. Then one kid called out in a voice that resonated across the room, clear as a bell. She remarked, you know, that's exactly how people talk about teenagers. Just like that, the energy in the room changed. Everyone was nodding, murmuring in agreement. Everyone could feel the truth and the power of that observation. And with that, the gulf was bridgeable. Suddenly, they weren't strangers, they were companions. They had some common experience to share with the people they would meet, some common experience of being human. So this is the great gift of being a follower of Jesus. You might be asked to leave many things behind, including things that you're really attached to. You might be asked to leave your distractions, your sources of security, your assumptions, your stereotypes. You might feel for a time like you've lost your center, but then you find it again. You find it in God and other people, people who become a part of you. So what a beautiful way of moving through the world. It seems to me we could read this gospel at the beginning of every day, couldn't we? It's always good to call ourselves back to this. Every morning we could probably ask, what would it mean for me to be fully present with each person that I might meet today? What would it mean to stay in the moment, to stay with them, to not let my mind rush ahead or distractedly wander off in a different direction? What would it mean to risk connecting, even if I didn't feel secure, even if I wasn't in my comfort zone? What would it mean to meet people without assumptions or labels? What if I decided to treat every person, no exceptions, as holy ground? Jack Kornfield is a Buddhist teacher. He wrote a book that some of you may have read called After the Ecstasy, The Laundry. When he was a young man, he went to study at a monastery in Thailand, and it was the practice at this monastery to bow to every person that crossed your path throughout the day as a sign of respect. And this was easy enough when the person that he passed in the hallway was an elder monk, someone who radiated spiritual depth, who he knew to be wise and who had lived much longer than he had. But when it was someone about his own age, you know, a 21-year-old monk, and someone he had experienced as being just full of pride and arrogance, and, or sort of a pretender monk who he privately suspected maybe had never meditated a day in his life, it was all he could do. He could barely just incline his head a little bit. It took all his willpower. But he was the only Westerner there. He wanted to make a good impression. He wanted to respect the culture and the tradition, and so he did his best to try to keep up with this practice. At last, he found a way to do it happily. He said, "I began to look for some worthy aspect in every person, just some worthy aspect. So I bowed to the wrinkles around the pretender monk's eyes, for all the difficulties that he had seen and suffered through. I bowed to the vitality and playfulness of the young, prideful monk, the incredible possibilities that life still had ahead of him. There was always something to bow to, something sacred in each person, some spark of the divine that asked for respect, even reverence. So Jesus invites his disciples to honor everyone, even the people that it's hard to love, hard to get along with, people who aren't hospitable and who don't welcome them at first. He sends them out, he sends us out now to be his hands and feet, his warmth, his compassion, his attentiveness, his presence, his humanity. Our life is meant to be one long mission trip. We're challenged over and over again to see no one as a stranger and everyone as a companion."